People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of People's Tribune Radio, we honor African American History Month with our guest, William Watkins, author of the book, The White Architects of Black Education.
But nevertheless, it gets back to the idea of controlling ideas, because now with mandatory testing, the curriculum can only be centered on a narrow body of knowledge rather than a wide body of inquiry. And I promise you that in that narrow body of knowledge, there's very little, again, social investigation, political inquiry. There's no sense of the child learning about the world around him. So in fact, the education that's being proposed is much more miseducation than it is education, and it's creating a narrowing of the imagination.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. February is African American History Month, and other than the struggle for freedom itself, there has been perhaps no greater struggle for blacks in America than the struggle for education. William Watkins is the author of The White Architects of Black Education. He was interviewed by Sheila Garland Olaniram in Chicago, Illinois.
With us today for a discussion is Professor William H. Watkins, author of the recently released book, The White Architects of Black Education. You have a long history as an educator, not only as a public school teacher, but as a professor at the University of Utah and the University of Illinois at Chicago.
My book is really, I believe, a look at how ideas are sponsored, how ideas are used to create conformity, consensus among the population, how the power group, the ruling group in our country, spread the ideas that they wish to have govern our society. Because ideas don't just fall from the sky. They just don't come from anywhere. They come from conscious elements who try to promote them among people.
In your book, you focus on the developing and institutionalizing of certain ideas. You talk about the impact of the development of these ideas in the notion of education, or at least how education came to be.
Well, specifically, I chose the term architect because of the implications. Let's face it, we have had in America colonial education. Very clearly, it was intended that people of color occupy a certain position in the industrial capitalist society. And that position would be as beasts of burden, as agricultural laborers, as semi-skilled laborers, as strike breakers, all of the lower strata of our society. And the educational system was structured to carry out a political agenda. So there was a different kind of education for African Americans than there was for the traditional public school. And I became interested in what was that, as Henry Bullock called it, that special kind of education that was concocted for people of color. And so the architects tries to draw our attention to this group of people who actually conspired. Black education is not a result of any accident. It didn't just happen by happenstance. There was a conspiracy. There were conferences that were held in different parts of the country where no African American educators were invited to participate, where the curriculum was actually mapped out. A curriculum for subservience, a curriculum for racial inferiority, a curriculum that would create a certain kind of population that could, at some minimal level, be invested in America, but at the same time remain subservient labor, remain inferior both politically and socially. So these architects that I have tried to explore were powerful people, and many of them are names that you would recognize, such as the Rockefeller family. Others are names that you would not recognize, but people that nevertheless played an important role behind the scenes in developing an educational program, which was really a political program. I think the important thing that I want to get over about black education is that it wasn't really about education at all. It was about situating a group of people for the 20th century.
In the book, you do talk at length about scientific racism and the development of scientific racism.
Racism has been with us for a while. In the mid to late 19th century, the scientific and medical community, as well as the political establishment, got very much involved in trying to make racism more officious and make it more, in their terms, scientific. That is, using measurement, using the appeal to numbers, which was very much a part of our intellectual society at that time. So the concept of measuring skulls, measuring all sorts of body parts, became an integral part of scientific racism in an effort to so-called prove the inferiority of people of color. Later on, around the time of World War I, IQ testing, the standardized test, then became the central vehicle of scientific racism. And those standardized tests were, in effect, said to be the proof that people of color were inferior because they, across the board, they were scoring lower. Well, of course they were going to score lower. They had not been exposed to education. How are you going to take a group of people that were enslaved for 350-odd years and simply say, well, now you're going to be equal to free people? So that whole testing movement, which I hope we'll return to a little bit later on, is an outgrowth of scientific racism, which is still with us today. The testing movement has now become thoroughly institutionalized in public education. There's not a school district in the country that does not use standardized testing. In fact, our Congress made it mandatory that every state in the union must, in some way or another, impose standardized tests. All this is an outgrowth of the movement of scientific racism. And in the final analysis, testing and the other tools that our educational establishment uses are simply another way to try to justify inequality. And every system based on economic inequality has to find ways and means of justifying why some people have more resources than others, why some people have more power than others, why some people have more freedom than others. That has to be justified. And school and testing have been ideal ways of trying to make inequality understandable. Of course, it's all a fraud, and we know it's a fraud, but it's perpetrated against us nevertheless.
Many parents and the general population have been swept up into this notion of testing, and parents are struggling and confused about the crisis in education, and all of these, or at least as far as we can see, the crisis that has developed or that continues to develop in education clearly is an offshoot of the development of the ideas of these architects that you research.
The public schools are not failing in terms of what they were intended to do. They're doing exactly what they were assigned to do, and that is to continue to reproduce the existing relationships that we have in our society, the existing authority structures, the existing power relationships. The silencing of children is no different than the silencing of working people in a major corporation. So the schools are training people to continue and to perpetuate the existing relationships. And the reward systems in school are very similar to the reward systems in the larger society. So in that sense, in the sense of why public schools were established in America, they're not failing at all. However, they're failing miserably when it comes to inner city children, children of color, children of working people, children of poverty. They're failing miserably because the schools have not committed their resources to educate everyone. Jonathan Kozol's fine book entitled Savage Inequalities gives us a real clear and illustrative example of the maldistribution of power and resources in schools. And there's a direct correlation between resources and achievement. We know a lot about educating children. We know a lot about how to proceed from children's own experiences, which we don't do in school. We do a lot of imposed learning. We do a lot of drill and kill. We do a lot of things that are totally irrelevant to children. We force them to memorize timetables. We force them to diagram sentences. We force them to do things that they'll never, ever be called upon to do in life. So in part, the educational system is structured so that some will fail, that others might succeed. So once again, we're continuing the inequality. What can parents do? Parents can demand, number one, that political changes take place in education. It's utterly ridiculous that some school districts in the North Shore spend many thousands of dollars per capita a year on their students, and some of the schools south of Roosevelt Road have maybe $750 a year per capita. The inequalities are both glaring and absurd and unacceptable. So we have to find a way, number one, to equalize